This week we travel to a galaxy far, far away and ask the question. With all the films, TV shows, animated shows, comics, novels, and video games out there, is there too much Star Wars? Don't get us wrong, of course, we love the Star Wars universe to pieces. But depending on which adaptation or spinoff you're talking about, mileage can vary. The Mandalorian and Andor were well received, but Obi-Wan and Ahsoka? Eh, not so much. And no one in fandom seemed super excited after seeing the Acolyte trailer. We also discuss other movies that have been adapted for television, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Westworld, The Karate Kid or Cobra Kai, and What We Do in the Shadows. The conversation ends with a Highlander tangent based on the original films, the 90s TV show, and the recently announced reboot starring Henry Cavill. And as always, thanks for listening. So the Star Wars The Acolyte trailer dropped yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were talking about it earlier, and how kind of unremarkable it seems is the word that I'll use.
Yeah.
And The Acolyte will fall in line with a bunch of different kind of Star Wars TV shows that have spun off from the from the feature films. You know, we had The Mandalorian and Obi-Wan.
Right.
We had Andor, Ahsoka. And there's some others, aren't there? Visions and something else
that have been announced. Now, the funny thing about that, though, is that Star Wars Visions and things like that, the animated series are much better, as we were discussed, in certain instances, than the actual live-action version of things.
Right.
You know, it's just sometimes certain things just don't age very well, and sometimes transitions in order to capture every audience that you can conceive of is not the way to go. Like,
right,
you know,
right.
Clone Wars, the animated series was excellent. It was great. I personally prefer the Tadakovsky version of it to the later 3D animated version of it done by Filoni. But even though I got used to the idea of what Star Wars Rebels was and Clone Wars and all those different things, still I liked the 2D animated version of it better. You know.
I left off the Book of Boba Fett as well, but so Clone Wars ran from 2008 to 2020, and I think Rebels ran from 2014 to 2018. Does that sound right?
Sounds right. Yeah, about right. It's approximately.
Okay. Yeah. And I was telling you that that my daughter is more of a fan of the animated spinoffs than she is the live action. She has no time for the live action stuff really at all. Although I think she did watch Obi-Wan. And part of what we wanted to discuss on the show today is not just like the question of, you know, is there such a thing as too much Star Wars, which apparently there is.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, just also like what you're kind of touching on, which is, and I used the word transmedia earlier.
Right.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. The idea of something being adopted to another medium, like, you know, obviously these started as feature films and have been adopted, you know, first into like comics and then into novels and now into television shows and animated shows. And even into, you know, like amusement park rides and stuff.
Right.
You know,
and so video games and things of that nature. Yeah. Yeah.
And video games.
Which is okay. It's okay if done well. You know, some things work very, very well in terms of transmedia. I think of the most successful one, sometimes it's poo-pooed upon, the movie with Mila Jovovich in it, Resident Evil. It started off as a video game.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of has a cult following in terms of just how good it is, or whether it's close to what the games are and what they aren't close to, whether it's good or not. It depends on the eye of the beholder and watcher. But I think those movies are relatively successful when they first came out in terms of, you know, people's expectations were and how they were met or not met by the main character.
Yeah.
But not all transmedia. Transmedia transformations have been successful and been good and well acclaimed, well received.
Yeah, everything can't be, as we know, with any, you know, you can't make a sequel for everything, you can't make a prequel for everything,
right?
And you can't adapt everything into something else, unless
you know, you're a really inspired creator and have a really inspired team of people that you're working with to bring this thing to life. You know, your mileage is going to vary. So, you know, if we go back to Star Wars and we're talking about something like Mandalorian, I think one of the things that really made Mandalorian a success was it didn't feel like the Star Wars universe in the sense of adventure and fantasy and swashbuckling and, you know, and you know, castle intrigue and rogue politics and, you know, and, and simmering romances. It was a Western.
Right. It was,
you know,
a Western.
It was an Adventure of the Week Western in the same way that we had, you know, like Adventures of the Week with the show Kung Fu.
Exactly.
Or, you know, or The Incredible Hulk, or, you know, he just kind of wanders into a new situation and a new set of characters. And they peppered all of those episodes with cameos of, you know, of well-known actors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes just doing voice work, sometimes actually showing up in person, like, you know, Giancarlo Esposito, Bill Burr shows up, you know, right, in an episode.
Right.
Obviously, Rosario shows up as Ahsoka Tano in one of the later seasons.
Yeah.
And then, sadly, you know, Jack Black and Lizzo show up in the last season.
Oh, my God.
I was like, ugh.
That's when, you know, that's again, that's when you know that you've gone too far. You kind of, like, jumped the shark, you know, the whole thing with Fonzie and...
Right,
and
a bit.
You know? Happy Days, it's like, dude, come on. This is not. Was this necessary? And just because you can doesn't mean that you should. You know, it's just that whole thing again, you know.
And the first time that it happened, it actually was with Bill Burr, where I was like, wait a minute, Bill Burr?
Right.
First of all, he's not an actor. B, you know, that hard Boston thing is just like, you know, that new Massachusetts thing is just,
right,
you know, that accent is gnarly. And he just wasn't a great actor, but he actually kind of redeemed himself when they brought him back in the second season.
Yeah.
Where his performance and the what they gave him to do, he actually kind of pulled it off a little bit. I was like, okay, all right, Bill Burr, I'm going to give you that one, Bill.
Right. I thought he did a good job, man. I was surprised. I didn't know his comedic leanings and where he was from, so I didn't really pay close attention to him. So he was the actor that was there doing...
Okay. Yeah, I 100% knew him as a stand-up comedian, a very funny one, but also a very edgy one who is not afraid to broach subjects and topics.
Yeah.
that others might find to be a bit taboo or you know, not very correct.
That's my understanding. Yeah.
So by the time I got to Obi-Wan, I was done.
Yeah. See,
the little girl who played Baby Leia.
Oh yeah.
Was awful. I mean, she was awful. And, you know, I know they're trying to make her like this kind of spunky girl boss, but who's to say that that's what Leia was when she was a kid? She may not have been that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I remember I was talking with Skylar about it, and she was like, oh, you know, you should be more patient. She's a child actor. I'm like, there are some amazing child actors out there. Go get one. You know, but this kid was garbage, and it just took me out every time it would switch from Ewan McGregor to Jimmy Smits to whoever else was on the show. When it switched to the kid, I was like, oh, I'm out, y'all. I am just out of it. So
I hear you. Yeah, my opinion on that show was I wasn't there for her anyway. I was there to see the further fall of Redemption Saga, or the how Obi-Wan felt to be abandoned his faith and be caught up in trying to protect young Luke Skywalker from a distance on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my thing. So anything else extra besides that wasn't even necessary to have in the first place. Even though I get that, you know, they're twins, they would be doing things separately at the same time, I didn't care much for the directing in it. It was what my problem with it, what it was. I don't think it was necessarily her acting per se.
That as well. I agree.
It was a thing to Disney-fy, which is we're coming to a little bit later on, where and she's running between the legs of her captors and doing these silly things that she was seeing on a Disney film. It's like, dude, this is not what you kind of expect to see in a Star Wars film or need to see in a Star Wars film. You know, the escape of kid, the little, you know, Cully McCulkin, you know, Home Alone vibe they were giving me and stuff. Like,
this kind of scampy kind of behavior.
Yeah.
You know, oh, you rascally, you.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know, hits in the face of the frying pan and keeps going. I mean, it's just like, I mean, just no. You know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not against like trying to expand, you know, the genres within side of the Star Wars universe. I just think it needs to be done with a little more deft hand and direction than what they sometimes take.
Gotcha. Do you think that, like, for instance, and we'll talk about some of the others a bit too, and not to stay too long on Star Wars, but
yeah,
you know, like I've told you, like with Mandalorian, obviously Favreau and his team, you know, they had a specific goal in mind for this to feel the way that it, you know, for Mandalorian to feel the way that it felt. I remember when it was announced, I was like, Mandalorian, really?
Right.
But it totally worked. And
it works.
I don't know if, like you said, there's definitely like a Disneyfication of the Obi-Wan series.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe even same thing with Ahsoka a bit. I mean, that one just didn't quite move me as well. But you and everybody else I know was a big fan of Andor when Andor came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you, and I've told everyone this, I think I tried to watch it like 3 times. And all 3 times I was just like, I don't get it, yo. What?
Yeah, I hear you.
What am I supposed to grab onto? What am I supposed to, you know, what's supposed to get me? And, I like
Diego Luna.
You know, I like Andor. And I like Andor. I like the character.
Diego Luna.
Cassian. Andor, I like the actor who plays him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like Tony Gilroy, who was the show creator. I like him, even though he's not a Star Wars fan.
Right.
And apparently that was a good thing because he came to it like bringing a whole other sensibility to the universe that we hadn't seen. And that's what you and other people have talked about, like more of the underworld and the seedier side of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah. He humanizes it. This is basically, you know, Cassian Andor basically is a refugee. You know, from a tribe of human beings, I guess if you can call them human beings, wherever they are, that have pretty much been all but like taken into slavery or dispensed throughout the galaxy or lost. So he's like a lost child trying to make his way throughout the galaxy, like kind of what this version this is a newer version of what Han Solo's story it kind of is, you know, wherein this he's disenfranchised child human being, but he's a grifter. He's smooth, so he's capable of doing things that, you know, allow him to kind of make his way through the universe, through the galaxy. And one of the things in Andor was not so successfully, you got a really chance to take a look at the Empire and how they had this secret police force that was like Gestapo. You know, they were very much like on it. They were like, you know, they were, you know, I want to do this, what are they doing? What are the rebels doing? We got to steer them in this direction. You know, where's this faction? Why we got to watch them grow as seeds of this? And they were just very, very like hungry for pleasing the Emperor, you know? And it was like, it's different. You don't see the Emperor. It wasn't necessary to see the Emperor cackling, but you knew what they were, you knew what they're up against. You knew if he didn't get what he wanted, that there was going to be consequences behind it, you know, including like sending Invader. But, you know, these guys are just, I mean, it just felt like
consequences and repercussions. Yeah,
exactly. It felt more like in some instances, it felt like a Born TV, a Born Identity type of situation.
And I recall you kind of making that analogy or a similar analogy back when it was first released in 2022.
Yeah.
That it did kind of remind you of, it was a grittier, more seedier, kind of an underworld version or a peek into the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
I may ultimately get back to it and watch it and enjoy it. You know, it could just have been, you know, I had like post-COVID brain or something, and it wasn't clicking for me, you know. But
Stellan Skarsgård, man, is the reason to watch it.
Yeah, yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah,
that guy, he's just next level, you know.
So, like, for instance, now the other part of it is like Ahsoka,
right?
Ahsoka is Skyler's favorite Star Wars character,
understandably.
Other than Anakin,
right?
Oddly enough,
understandably, sure.
And I loved her appearance in Mandalorian. I was like, okay,
right?
They kind of got this right. She's giving me some good energy. Right. It was a great episode that she appeared in. She appeared in the episode that Michael Biehn was in, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And the first time is it Bruce Lee's daughter? No, it's not Bruce Lee's daughter. It's one of the Bruce Lee's sparring partners, I forget her name right now, She's the we'll find out coming out later. She's the
stunt person.
No, she's not a stunt person. She's a main character. She's the one that Ahsoka squares off against in the end.
Oh yeah.
I can't think of her name right
now.
Escapes me. But
yeah.
But
that was another one where I tried it and I watched like 1.5 episodes and I was like, okay, this is boring, yo.
Yeah.
We have missed the plot here, okay?
Yeah.
And you felt kind of similarly. I know you finished the series because you're a completist in that way.
But, unfortunately.
Yeah. But where do you think that they missed with Ahsoka? Because Ahsoka, again, was taking a bit more pages from Mandalorian in the sense of she's kind of like this wanderer.
Mm-hmm.
Not a wanderer per se, but she's kind of off on her own. You know, she was Anakin's Padawan, and now she's kind of, you know, like doing her own thing.
Right.
And they did have guest stars that would jump in and out of there. I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in like the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And there were others, right?
Right. You know, it's what the problem with Ahsoka was, to paraphrase Vader, or paraphrase Emperor, lack of vision. You know, while I salute Dave Filoni for all his prowess with animation and things like that, he didn't show himself to be a director which is capable of making cuts based on storyline and narrative. When certain things you do in animation and pull off with a great deal of aplomb, he just didn't. Either him or his editing team didn't get it, bro. Like there's things which, if you're watching, and not all Star Wars fans watch everything. Not all Star Wars fans watch Clone Wars as a primer to be able to get into what was going on inside of Ahsoka. So you left a lot of people in the dust. And for the people that did watch, you know, Ahsoka and the Clone Wars, they were left like nonplussed by the fact that she was so seemingly emotionless in the very beginning, and she kind of warms up.
Yes.
And the problem with that is they don't realize that what she had gone through left her scarred, and she was kind of like tired of being in that situation. I think that was probably a direct reflection of what Dave Filoni told her to do, you know. But you shouldn't have told her to do that. I mean, because you know Rosario is a little more loose and a little more bubbly, and she could have. And so is Ahsoka Tano. Ahsoka Tano is she snips. She's the playful, you know, bantering against her master, just you know, not disrespecting
kind
him,
of, yeah, kind of mercurial in a way.
Yeah, you know, and fun loving at the same time. So I didn't see that in the beginning. She actually warmed up later on in the role, but I think she was just a little too serious with being this, you know, I lost all my friends type situation, looking for, you know, one of the characters that passed away or was presumably he was gone, you know. So that whole thing. Going into with Admiral Thrawn and going into another part of the galaxy that had been explored before, and the space whales and the letdown that I felt with the two Dark Jedi characters. It was like, come on.
Yeah.
They were trying to throw too much at us at the same time. And then Sabine's character was just like too long-winded and not thrilling and fulfilling at all. And all of a sudden now she has like force abilities that she didn't have. And like she had latent idea. Supposedly it was like a latent force ability thing that was kind of she had supposedly in the animated series. Now she's full blown a Padawan out of necessity to Ahsoka. Like, come on, man. Ahsoka, who never completed Jedi training, quote unquote, because she dropped out of the Jedi Order when they put her through the
right. Exactly.
You know, so
exactly.
It was just too much. It was too much that they were trying to accomplish inside of a short time period, and they didn't focus on the right things. I think that's the main thing. The editing was not good. It could have been better, and they didn't focus on the right things. You know, and that comes from being a first-time director, I think.
And I think also, too, the approach that they were taking, and you tell me if you agree, mm-hmm. of trying to tie in the history and the timeline of the animated series and then have it be the whole transmedia thing.
Yes.
And then we're going to bring that into live action, but nobody has seen any of that stuff. You know, if you haven't seen the animated series,
you're lost.
You don't get, like you said, you don't get the weight of that might be on the character's shoulders. You don't get any of what's in that person's past. And, you know, like I was talking with Sky, and we were, she was saying that, you know, she's like, they should just animate everything.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, I don't know why you make it live action. Just make it animated. then you can make it look how you want to look. You know, you can make a ship as fantastic. You can blow up a plane. You can do whatever you want.
Right.
And you're not kind of hampered by all the live action trappings of cost and building sets and,
right,
you know, and hiring CG artists. But, you know, my point to her was, is that, you know, if you do everything animated, there's less of a chance, or you lose a good portion of the audience.
Yeah.
There's some people just don't watch animation, so they're just not going to watch it. They're not going to see, even if it's a movie, if it's a feature, if it's a TV show, they're not going to watch it.
Right.
And then the second thing is you can't really trade off of the names and faces of actors that you have on the show.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to have Simon Pegg be the voice of somebody in The Force Awakens, or Jason Sudeikis, you know, is the voice of a stormtrooper,
right,
in Mandalorian, or Phoebe Waller-Bridge is the voice of the robot in Solo.
Right.
But if you can't show their faces, if you can't trade on their names, now there's less of a chance that people are going to, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So it's just, that's why, one of the reasons why people lean into live action. You can take advantage of the fact that this is Carl Weathers, or this is,
rest in peace.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead, or whomever. Yeah, rest in peace to great Carl Weathers. Or as my buddy's son called him, did you know that Carlos Weathers died?
Carlos. Are we talking about the same Carl Weathers? You know, Carlos Weathers.
Carlos Weathers.
Wow. Was that his full name, bro? Carlos? I don't think so.
No, it wasn't. He just...
Okay,
No, I don't think so. My man's son, he was just trying to connect with his dad, and but he didn't have the details right.
Nice.
But yeah, you know, this idea, like you said, of moving the storyline,
mm-hmm,
and moving these characters into live action and then having it be consistent, as opposed to, well, we have to tell our own stories in live action. We have to tell our own version of Ahsoka. I mean, not completely unrelated from, you know, from the canon.
Right.
But let's not just like pick up from here and just, you know, just pick it up from here, you know, and then nobody knows really what happened before that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, there's no hook. There's no attachment. And the hook that you're giving us is the bait is like so uninteresting that it's like, I don't even see why we want to bother in the first place. And that's what happened, I think, with Ahsoka. And then some of the live action tricks, some of the things you work in animation don't work in live action, dude. Like her going outside the spaceship and putting on a spacesuit and doing the flip and stuff, that's absolutely ridiculous in live action, bro. Did you see that where Rosario is Ahsoka Tano, goes outside of the spaceship and she's fighting off fighters on the wing of the spaceship or on the hull of the spaceship with a lightsaber?
Okay.
It's like, dude, that doesn't work in live action. That was weird. It was just like, this obviously paying homage to the, you know, the animated series, where we'll work in animated series. It's fun. But again, that transmedia default, you know?
Yeah.
You know, how much can we do or how much should we do in terms of good taste and execution? And I think sometimes there's a trade-off, and you have to, like, let live action do what it does well and let animation do what it does well. And that's where you can bridge the two gaps. You know, but, I mean, that's enough about Star Wars, man. Let's talk about some earlier things go ahead.
Well, no. To the point that you're making here, I was watching an interview earlier today that John Bernthal conducted with Sean Penn.
Okay.
Sean Penn was on his podcast, and they were talking about as actors and how you have to do a lot of preparation, and you know, you want to learn about, you know, the role, mm-hmm, and who the character is. If it's a real character, you want to learn as much about them and their actual lives, and if it's a character that has a particular profession, you know, you may do like quite a bit of research and have your own conversations with people who work in those fields to try to, you know, to really be able to portray what it is that the character,
right,
what their profession is. And Penn was making the point that he says, yeah, as actors, you know, we do put a lot into as far as preparation goes and trying to access, you know, this person in this world and trying to. He said, but that can often hamper you as well. He says, you know, you can be in a scene where you're handling a particular piece of machinery, you know, a gun or, you know, some kind of machinery. And he says, yes, you could not be technically doing it the correct way. Mm-hmm. But if you take a bit of our statistic license, it makes the scene better. In other words, it reads better for somebody who's watching it, mm-hmm. as opposed to it being technically correct.
Right.
And he says sometimes all of that can kind of get in the way. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, like, you know, like you said, you know, do what works best for live action. Do what works best for animation. Do what works best as a novel, a comic book, mm-hmm. A TV show, what have you. You know, like serve that medium and exploit as many of the strengths that that medium has to make your thing good. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think, again, it depends on what kind of fan you are. You know, I am more of a casual Star Wars fan where everything is not going to appeal to me. Mm-hmm. You're more of a voracious, you know, salivating Star Wars fan, or at least you were, you know, in the past. You were like the Cookie Monster before. Yeah, that was
cookie. Yeah. But I mean, not so much anymore, man. I mean, they've aged me out, I think, based on what it is they're doing in certain instances. Like, I've been watching the latest rendition of the latest things going on right now as far as Star Wars is The Bad Batch. The first two seasons were excellent. The third season is like a sleeper to me, man. It's just like, I just can't stay up. You know, I can't watch it fully all the way through. I think the sets or the atmosphere is just too dark most of the time. Like, most of the time it's really super dark wherever they are. And it's like, wow, mm-hmm. man, this is not good for, you know, late night watch or early morning watch. And I tap out. You know, I'm not a fan of the lead character in the first three episodes. Omega, she's got a strong New Zealander voice, a strong New Zealander accent, mm-hmm. and it kind of throws me off. I like New Zealander accents. I like New Zealand, but hers is it's so something that it's like, wow, I shouldn't be thinking about where you're from. I should be thinking about, you know, where you're at, to coin,
right?
It's been Rakim a little bit, but it's like, I just like, oh, you know, I guess you're okay, you know, but maybe if it's just more, the story is just like, how does the story make everything better, more interesting? And sometimes certain stories don't need to be told, Swizz. Like some stories are better off being back matter, you know? Some stories are better off being in the distance or narrative which drives the person, not being shown on camera. All stories are interesting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some stories are the things which are the building blocks on which that interesting point jumps off on. You know what I mean? Not meant to go back on and explore. Like George Lucas knew that. And from episode four on, he knew what was the most interesting story. He started episode four, you know? And then went backwards.
Wow.
I mean, I know there's this whole other thing about that. But arguably, four, five, and six are very successful, you know, by comparison to...
Yeah.
The prequels and then the sequels. It was all willy-nilly. But like we were discussing earlier too, man, it's like, how much is too much? When do things need to go on? When do things need to stop? You know, there's a beginning, middle, and end to most stories, and let them be what they are. Let them fill you with a sense of wonder and glee and fulfillment. And then let them go. Let them go. Let them breathe.
So,
you know, I think...
And when you say that, and I agree with you, what we mean is creatively.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know Hollywood is a beast and a whore, and as long as they can make money on something, they're just going to make money on it until it doesn't make money anymore, regardless to how good it may be or, you know, varying degrees of quality.
Right.
So that's kind of the thing that I want to ask you is, you know, one of the things that I think was discovered with Star Trek, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they started making the feature films for Star Trek, and they made three new feature films, not talking about the ones from back in the 80s, going into the... Did they go into the 90s? No, I don't think they went into the 90s.
No, they didn't. No,
But not the original Star Trek feature films, but the most recent ones with Chris Pine and Zoe and Zach Quinto and all of that. So one of the things that I think was... made clear is that Star Trek is not a destination show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a destination IP,
mm-hmm.
where you wait 2 years, 3 years, oh, and then you get another one, and then you wait. You know, the serialized nature of it and the, again, the kind of adventure of the week nature of it lends itself much better to television. They've had way more success with the different Star Trek television shows than ever have had with the feature films. It's not even comparable, you know.
Not at all.
So I wonder if maybe even the opposite may be true for Star Wars in general, is that it is an event situation, and it is something where it is served better to have time in between for you to miss things and for you to be completely inundated with any kind of Star Wars you want. We got it. You know, if you want Boba Fett, if you want Ahsoka, if you want the feature films, if you want, you know, we got it all. Maybe it doesn't benefit from being so everywhere.
It doesn't. And to your point, though, I think this is an interesting thing. The fanfares of both say it all, right? The fanfare for Star Trek is Journey, you know, where in Star Wars it's like
majesty and grandness and epic scale.
Right, from the very beginning it says, look, watch me. This is what happened. This is great. This is fantastic. And then when they don't do that, it's like, okay, well, it's not so much. I mean, Star Trek opens up with Stardates. Stardate, blah, 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 1444.
Star Trek. This version. That version. This version.
Yeah.
This chapter.
Yeah.
That chapter.
Yeah. Star Wars is all in your face. You know, the Star Destroyer overhead chasing the blockade runner. It's that kind of, you know, that kind of storytelling. And it's like, well, that's good. I mean, I'm not discounting the one, and you can't
even the crawl at the beginning.
Yes,
you know, just says, okay, I have to watch this.
Yeah. You know, it's just it's a visual masterpiece. And yes, the more you put out there, ultimately, the more diluted it becomes. It just does.
Right.
You know, and it's not. It doesn't have to be that way, but you have to make sure it maintains a sense of interest and veracity and juiciness, you know. You have to limit, you know, some, again, like we discussed in the last one episodes you and Adrian discussed, you know, it's not unique because you put number one on it. You know, it's if there's too many out there, it dilutes the pool, and a diluted pool means it doesn't have the same kind of interest, and if it's not rare enough. I think the rarefication of Star Wars was perhaps the secret sauce when it came to how it was released back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, like every 4 years, if you're lucky, every 3 years you get a brand new one. A whole decade goes by and you get the prequels, you know, it's like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and even, you know, you and I saw all those prequels, and the you know, the excitement and the expectation and the clamoring around it was exactly what you thought it was going to be. It was like a decade later, we don't care, we're getting more Star Wars and we are into it. And so I think now, like, you know, again, like you said earlier, because you can, should you, you know, it's like, okay. And part of I think obviously what's happening with television, as it relates to feature films and all those things kind of, you know, being adapted, transmedia adapted into television, is because we live in an age where television is where a lot of the best writing and a lot of the best production is happening. Doesn't mean that it's not happening in movies, but it's happening in television on a level that it never has previously. You know, and that goes for dramas, to comedies, to, you know, the fantastic, you know, stuff that we all enjoy. So when you and I were talking earlier, some of the other examples that I would pick, and there have been, you know, we can point to tons of examples of something being really popular in feature films and then they try to make TV shows out of it, or something being really popular in TV shows and they try to make a feature out of it.
Or even going to comics, the seeding for a lot of these things, you know, the quote unquote lost leader in a lot of these things. It works well in comics, but doesn't work well in the movies or TV show.
Right. Like the you know, like they've obviously that we've seen trailers and bits and of Deadpool 3, and we see Wolverine in the yellow and blue costume, the classic yellow and blue costume.
Right.
Something that we never saw, you know, previously.
Right. Singer's X-Men.
You know, it. Yeah, as far as the X-Men and then the Wolverine movies and so on and so forth. And, you know, and it may be played completely for laughs because, hey, it's Deadpool.
Right.
But the reality is, I mean, you know, you're getting that. But, you know, like I think back to like Terminator, you know, they tried to make a Sarah Connor TV show. It didn't work.
Yeah.
You know,
it was good.
I mean,
though.
So, you know,
it was good. But
yeah, so I remember you liked it. Some people didn't like it, but ultimately it didn't work in terms of ratings. And so it didn't last.
Right.
And you and I were talking earlier today about the last Batman series that Matt Reeves wrote and directed, mm-hmm. with Robert Pattinson and Jeffrey Wright and Zoe Kravitz. And that's the latest installment in the Batman universe. So that's Batman doing his thing. We've had three major Batmans in the last 40 years, Michael Keaton, right. in the 80s and all the other guys who followed him. Then the Christian Bale in the three movies from the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And now we have a third Batman. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see this one because I was just...
Well, fourth.
You know, superhero fatigue had kicked in for me and I was just like, But you enjoyed it though, right?
You know, what I try to do, I try to lay aside my biases when I watch these things. I know already I'm not going to ever be able to have that somewhat quasi-religious experience that I had when I first saw it in the beginning, you know? You can't ever, you know, it's never as good, mm-hmm. as the first time, like Sade says, you know what I mean? So, it's that kind of feeling. But so I try to see the characters anew through fresh eyes and see which direction they're going from it and try to appreciate it from a narrative standpoint. And when the narrative falls apart, that's when we have an issue. When the characterization is not plausible enough for the narrative you're trying to establish, that's why I have problems with it now, because I become more critical.
Okay,
I become more critical and doing this show and doing my own creative things has caused me to become more critical. Like, what's the reason why this person's doing this thing? Is this reason believable? I mean, why are they going that far? You know, like. Obviously, Batman is a troubled individual from the very beginning, because most people that parents get shot in an alleyway wouldn't go and put on a suit and go and beat up bad guys. You know, they would go and find, right. out ways of assaging that problem, that guilt and that fear and that whole thing would be, you know, that's for psychologists to take care of. But this guy took it upon himself to go and put on some dungarees, you know, and some boots and a cape and go out and beat up criminals, you know. To try and right the wrongs that were done to him and his family, and I guess,
yeah.
But that very much is a vigilante, you know, and that's what vigilantes do. So that's another conversation entirely. But to your point, you know, as they continue to try and salvage and put more interest in these franchises, you know, they're trying to find a new audience that will allow them to make more money, which will then put the characters back on display again and do more different things. So. Everybody's gonna have their own different take of that on those characters, and rightfully so. They're artists in their own right, but how far do you go from the source material before it becomes not really Batman, not really Superman, not really the X-Men? You know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and it's just you see them now as superheroes, just a vehicle for making money and making more franchises and stuff like that. They're not really taking it
right
seriously. It's just a play. It's a toy that's everybody's playing with.
Right, and even like if you look at the Marvel, the cinematic universe, and then how they have started adapting those into TV shows, and again, the continuity of, you know, WandaVision comes right from the movies. You know, it's a direct follow up.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. You know, it's a direct follow up from the films.
Mm-hmm.
But those Marvel TV shows, for the most part. Have been met with maybe 50
yeah.
acceptance, and then maybe even a little less than that in some cases. Maybe about 30% of what they tried worked, right. and seemed to be successful, and the rest didn't. But I do agree with you. Even when I first heard that they were going to do another Batman, this was before I found out about Pattinson,
mm-hmm.
Whom I don't find plausible as Bruce Wayne,
yeah.
just from what I've seen.
Yeah.
But you know, when I heard it was announced, I was like, okay, because they were saying, okay, he's going to be treated more like a detective, which has always been my thing. The guy's, you know, the guy's nickname is the world's greatest detective.
Right.
You know, he's modern day Sherlock Holmes. He is using his brain. He's not just using the jujitsu that he learned over here.
And the gadgets.
And the kickboxing that he learned over there. And, you know, he doesn't just pull gadgets out of his belt. You know, he's a thinker.
Right.
So there are other examples, obviously, like I mentioned, as far as Terminator, et cetera, that where they've adapted things from film to TV. And in a lot of cases, you know, the other things that they're adapting don't have these huge universes that are already in place. Mm-hmm. They don't have, you know, these, you know, legions of fans. They don't have fandom surrounding them. So the creators have way more license to change how they adapt them and how they adopt them to this other medium.
Exactly.
And to put their own, you know, to put their foot, their fingerprints all over it and to make whatever changes they would like. But I remember, obviously, one of the most successful was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when I saw the film, I was like, okay, the film, well, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
But the TV show was nuts. It just was, I mean, people loved it. Yeah, Joss
did that, man. Joss did it. He did a great job with Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And even more so, that wasn't my gateway drug. My gateway drug was Angel, bro. And I didn't think I would like Angel because I'm not really a David Boreanaz fan. At least I wasn't at the time. But as I watched more Buffy, and watch more Angel, like, wow, this guy is like, he's troubled, he's deep, he's interesting, he's engaging, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that was a jump off point for me that I got interested in his other characters based on how well he was played. So it was like, wow.
Yeah. I remember you talking about that and how much you enjoyed that show.
Mm-hmm.
But. You know, some other examples, you know, Westworld obviously was, you know, was a film from back in the 70s, I think it was.
Right, it was 70s.
With Yul Brynner. Yeah. And then they adapted it to, you know, to modern day with Tessa Thompson, Jeffrey Wright, and, right.
Anthony Hopkins, James Marsden.
Yeah. Fargo obviously was a movie from the 90s, and they adapted it into what appears to be a pretty successful television show. And they're probably well into telling their own stories at this point, you know, as it relates to Fargo.
Okay.
But a couple others that I can think of. What We Do in the Shadows. I don't know if you ever saw that movie. It's a film that Taika Waititi and Jemaine Clement, I think is his name.
Okay.
Where they did a movie, and it was about a bunch of vampires who are roommates.
Okay.
And they're living in modern day, and it's very kind of kooky. And they adapted it into a TV show that was on, I believe, FX. And you can watch them now on, like, Hulu. But the show is hilarious. The show is infinitely funnier than the movie ever was.
Okay.
It almost head and shoulders above it in terms of quality and the humor. But, you know, there are other ones. Cobra Kai, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, was a big success. You know, yeah. And I was surprised at how much I liked that, especially the first season.
Yeah, I was like, wow. Okay.
And, yeah. But... So this is what I wanted to ask you about, and this is not really like an adaptation into television, although they did do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Highlander, right?
Okay.
Didn't they do a Highlander television show?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It furthered the idea and concept of what it was for an immortal to be living for a long period of time. I mean, Adrian Paul was untouchable. I mean, as far as the concept of what an immortal was, and his adventures, his story, the drudgery and the unthankfulness of time that wages on human beings. He showed that, dude, the wear and tear. He was brilliant. And because they had
much in the way, like with vampires, where they sit, you know, where they'll sometimes portray vampires as being kind of tragic because they watch everyone die.
Exactly.
And every day is the same. So they have nothing to live for because the concept of living for something has been taken from
them. Exactly. And to be on the run and avoiding avoiding battles and to try and live to this point where it's just two of you battling to the end of time. It was amazing to watch this guy go through that, and then to find there's a secret organization behind it watching the guys, you know, get older and do these things. And there's a chronicle of down time of people who watched the mortals, and they pegged them, mm-hmm. and tagged them, and they were, you know, trying to work around their influence and steal them away from who and what they were. And Adrian Paul did a great job, man. I you know, down to the very end, he was, to me, even though I liked the first movie, second was garbage, doesn't exist. And the third movie, as Adrian and I discussed before in the past, but 1 and 3 are pretty good movies. But the series by far elevates the concept of what the Highlander is to the next level in a brilliant way. Conversely, the animated series Highlander was shite. With a capital S. And yeah. I'm like, man, how could you guys get this wrong? And there's two things involved. Two things that work in terms of that kind of dark modal storytelling and atmosphere. And one is atmosphere. And everything in animated series is like this color form animation that has no depth to it.
Yeah.
That's the first thing you did wrong.
Yeah.
Second thing you did wrong is blonde hair and blue eyes for a Highlander. You know, those guys aren't blonde hair, blue eyes. They're generally like black hair and maybe greenish brown, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? There's variants in terms of their tone,
yeah.
tonality, more olive tone. They're not. So it's like, and then it was just, if you get the wrong animation house, man, it can make or break your project, pretty simply stated, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what happened in the animated series, which is like utter garbage to me. And I tried to watch it. I just could not do it.
We were talking about Batman a little while earlier, and I was, the point I was actually trying to get to was to mention the Harley Quinn animated series.
Right.
That you can watch now streaming on Max, excuse me, not HBO Max. Now it's just Max.
Right.
But, which is very funny. I watched the first season and it's R rated. It is absolutely filthy, but it is very, very funny. Right. But staying with Highlander, a slight tangent here. So what are your thoughts on the Highlander remake that they're going to do?
I'm not interested.
With Henry Cavill, yo.
Oh, no. Is that really happening?
That's what I hear.
They put poor Henry. Poor Henry's in everything, dude. Henry is going to be. Henry's going to be
he's
in
The Witcher. He's Superman.
He's going to be in a Warhammer 30K, and which he has a particular affinity for, which I understand. So I don't mind seeing Warhammer. Warhammer would be good, interesting to see him in, but now to see him in Highlander, dude, I don't see it, dude. I don't see it. It's just too much. It's overkill at this point. You can't be every hero.
Well, apparently, I'm Googling it now. Apparently, Henry Cavill is going to be the villain in the new Highlander. He's not going to be the immortal. He's going to be the villain.
He's going to be the Kurgan, yo? I can't see him as the Kurgan, yo. That's just, first off,
maybe he's not going to be the Kurgan. Okay. Maybe he's going to be something else.
Okay, I don't see him, dude.
Okay, hold on. Here we go. It says, it's Henry Cavill's Highlander. People are saying that Dave Bautista should be the Kurgan.
That could kind of work. It can work, man. You talk about two people I'm tired of seeing right now. It's Dave Bautista and Henry Cavill. I'm tired of seeing both of them, bro. I mean, after seeing Dave, I like Dave. Don't get me wrong. Dave was awesome. I mean, I've been watching Dave since WWE, you know, WWF. Dave was awesome. He was a big dude. And to watch him get his comeuppance, to watch him get his day and shine, you know, when I saw him in Blade Runner 2079, I think that's what it is. Is that what it's called? 2049? Which one is it?
2049.
2049. Thank you.
2049.
2049. He was excellent. He was good in that role. You know, to see him in various other roles as he's maturing as an actor, he's very likable, very convincing. You know, of course, Drax not being an exception to that, but he's got potential. But
let me pause you.
Go ahead.
He has been good in more things than he has been bad for me.
Okay. And I'll agree with that.
Like, he was good as Drax. I loved him as Drax. I love him as Drax. His character in Dune, is it Rabban?
Rabban, yeah.
Raban.
Right.
Raban,
right.
He's pretty good as that character.
Right.
He had a role in the last Glass Onion movie that Rian Johnson directed. He was very good in that.
Okay.
He was very good in Knock at the Cabin, the apocalyptic horror movie that M. Night Shyamalan did.
That's what I heard.
He's been good in more things than he has been bad in, and I'm very surprised. But when you hear him talk in interviews, he's a very thoughtful and sensitive guy, and he's very serious about being good at what he does.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it won't be Clancy Brown's Kurgan.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course you are, Candy.
She, she was your woman. Your woman.
It's like, wow. I raped a dead body before I took her head before I... What is it? What's the dirty line he says?
Something like
he took her head and then raped her dead body or something.
No. He killed Ramirez and took her body and took her before your body was cold. Something along those lines. So for
something like that. Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like wow,
yeah.
Wow, that was foul. That was foul.
Yeah.
But my line was, you know, I've got something to say. Better to burn out than fade away. And then he's knocking the candles out.
Yeah.
he was awesome. Clancy destroyed that role, bro.
But you have to wonder, was that written for him or did he bring that
performance? He brought that to the performance, though.
I suspect he did, yo, because how would that look on the page?
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how would you write that?
Right? I mean, here's the thing. His acting in that role was so convincing and so good that Mario Van Peebles basically played the same role for a different character in the third film of The Highlander. You know, that's how good his performance was as a villain that would be, you know, that type and that ilk. Mario Van Peebles basically aped what he did as Kurgan. So, but to your point, Dave Bautista is very convincing. He may bring something else extra to it. But I don't know. I just don't have a desire to see any more Highlander films, dude. My Highlander peaked out when Adrian Paul, you know, did what he did.
And, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And all subsequent made for television mini movies that were made for the Highlander and is ending. So I'm done with that.
Wasn't it the live action television show? Was that Christopher Lambert?
No, that was Adrian Paul.
That was Adrian Paul.
Yeah, it was Adrian Paul. Christopher Lambert was the movies.
That's right. Yeah. I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in terms of, I guess to kind of close it out, what are our thoughts about the idea of, because I think, obviously, Hollywood, all they care about is money.
Yeah.
If we can make more money off of it, we're going to.
Right.
That's what you need to expect. If we can do it, we will do it. And we'll do it until it's dead. And then we'll move on to the next thing. And like one of the things I was discussing with, was it Adrian or was it? I don't know if I was just, who I was talking to about it. I was doing some reading and my thought was, you know, like people talking about, you know, the end of superhero movies as a genre that Hollywood is obsessed with, right?
Right.
And, you know, and there have been varying degrees of success from movies. You know, the first two Thor movies did okay, but the third one did great.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The first Captain America movie did okay, but the second and the third ones did great.
Mm-hmm.
The second Avengers movie did not do great, but the first one did. And, you know, obviously the third and the fourth were tremendous. So there's always been ups and downs as far as success at the box office. But in terms of superhero movies as a genre possibly going away, one of the things that I thought about was, in order for Hollywood's obsession for something like it has with superhero movies, in order for that to disappear, it's going to have to be replaced by something else.
Yeah.
And the example that I would use is Westerns. There was a time for maybe 50, 60, 70 years, the very first films that were ever made featured, you know, cowboys and people riding horses and that kind of storytelling. And there was a time where you couldn't have told anybody where there wouldn't be Westerns in theaters that people wanted to pay money and go see. But what happened was with the advent of television in the late 60s, early 70s, Westerns moved from the feature films to television, and then all of a sudden, by the mid to late 70s, they stopped making Westerns.
Right.
And they replaced that with a fascination for cops and robbers movies and for crime fiction. And then eventually, when you get to the 80s, you get into a proper action movie.
Right.
You know, like the ones that we've discussed. And now, all of a sudden, all those things replace the Western. So I almost think the same thing would have to happen with superhero movies, where something else is going to have to replace it. They're just not going to let it go. They're going to keep trying to do it, you know, and to varying degrees of success until, you know, something else comes along and becomes its new obsession.
Right.
So, but anyway, I just wonder, you know, like with Star Wars, I think if they thought about Star Wars differently, like we were talking about in terms of it's an event. It's not something that you can just inundate people with. It's an event. Make it special.
Right.
You know, treat it specially. You know, even with the TV shows, we don't need 800 TV
shows.
We
don't, bro.
Mando was kicking ass. You know, yeah. Andor, you and others really appreciated that. You know, space it out. Make it special.
Make it special.
And don't make it like, you know, where it's so everywhere that, you know, it becomes commonplace and like you said, diluted. And
right.
You know, in terms of diminishing quality.
It's freaking Hill Street Blues, dude. It's like, come on, man. It's like, okay, how many times? I mean, not Hill Street Blues. Law and Order, dude. I mean, how many years is that going on?
Exactly.
It's like, come on, you know, man. I mean,
and that is serialized. So I mean, they just do another version. Law and Order, San Francisco. Law and Order,
right.
East Coast. Law and Order, the MC unit. You know, Law and Order.
My God.
You know, my Death God. And Dismemberment or whatever. Right. So.
You know, I'm like, this is. I get it. I really do. It's just, dude, I don't want to see it end. I mean, I don't want to, you know, if we're to drive today, I would feel a lack of, you know, I would feel like I'm missing something, but I just want them to do better jobs of it. Like, take your time, make it worth something, you know, make that time that you are spending developing this project, make it a worthwhile venture. Like, make it, I don't want to say make it all tie in, but it's a galaxy. It's worlds. It's stories that are built on the ideas and concepts of beings interacting with each other, and discovering things, and trying to make the best of their lives. Don't waste that. And I think they do, especially in the Disney universe, Star Wars.